We call the time the Passover season, but Passover season was actually composed of three feasts. One happened on, in Jesus' case, on a Friday, one happened on the Saturday following, and one happened on the Sunday following. Didn't always happen that way, because the way they were set up was by a certain number of days after the Sabbath day. But that year, one was on Friday, one was on Saturday, one was on Sunday. Now, the Friday festival was the Passover celebration itself. It celebrated God's great act of deliverance of his people from Egypt. And so that was the day the lamb was sacrificed in the temple, not only the individual lambs of all the Jewish people, but one lamb for the whole nation of Israel to remember that God had redeemed them. And that sacrifice, the one for the whole nation, was actually made at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Now, it's so profound to me to realize that the scenario was something like this. As 3 o'clock in the afternoon on that Passover day, happened to be Friday, approached, a priest would climb up to the pinnacle of the temple, the highest corner. He would carry a shofar trumpet with him, a ram's horn trumpet. When exactly 3 o'clock came, a signal would be given, and he would blow that shofar. And the whole city, at least those who were religious, would come to a standstill for a moment because they knew at that moment a lamb was being slain to remember God's past redemption and his promise to redeem his people again. And here on Good Friday, 3 o'clock approached, and the priest climbed. I suspect it went in this order. The priest blew the trumpet. The whole world came to silence. And in the silence, a figure hanging on the cross picked that exact moment to say, "It's finished." And it's so powerful to see a feast that God had instituted 1,200 or more years earlier. The shofar had been blown like that for 1,200 years at 3 o'clock. And at that particular moment in history, that instant, not at 2:30, not at 3:45, at 3 o'clock, God said, now it's time to fulfill the Passover. Now came the next feast, which actually started at sundown Friday night and went into Saturday. It's called the Feast of Unleavened Bread. It's part of the Passover festival. The Unleavened Bread Feast celebrated the fact that God had promised to give his people bread or life out of the ground. And one of the things that happened at that time, even on Friday evening in the synagogue service, was the Jewish people, the religious Jews, would gather to turn their eyes to God and to say, God, in a way, it's springtime. Give us life out of the ground. We need the grain to come up. It's just been planted. We need you to give us this promised bread. Jesus is buried at the moment that all these people are asking God to give life out of the ground. And that becomes even more amazing when you realize that the week before he had said to his disciples, unless a grain of wheat fall into the ground and die, it can't come back to life, so it is with me. So here we have Jesus, who called himself the bread of life, who's being put into the ground on the very feast that celebrated the people's request, the people's faith that God would give them life out of the ground. I teach my students that Jesus wasn't buried. Jesus was planted. He was put in the ground so that life could come out of the ground. And that happens not just any old time. That happens at sundown Friday, the beginning of Saturday to a Jew, at the moment the Feast of Unleavened Bread was being celebrated.
Even though he was actually in a tomb, he was not buried.
He was in a tomb in the ground,
yes.
Right. So he wasn't buried necessarily in the dirt. But that whole image of being put in, the symbolism is there nevertheless. So now you have Jesus crucified on the feast that remembered the death of the Lamb, and buried on the feast that remembered the grain of wheat in the ground being planted there. Then comes the next feast, which is called the Feast of First Fruit. And that, in this case, was on Sunday. The Feast of First Fruit was a celebration of the beginning of the barley harvest, which happened at that time of the year. And the people would go out to their barley field. Very little of it was ripe yet. But they would pick the first few grains of barley that they could find. And they would bring those grains of barley along with them when they came to Jerusalem for the Passover season. And on the Feast of First Fruits, they'd bring those few little grains of barley to the temple, to God, to say, this is all we have. But we trust you that just like you gave us this little bit, we're going to get the rest. That's First Fruits. Now, when the Feast of First Fruits rolled around that year, here are all these people who are saying to God, you've given us this much. This is our way of saying we believe you're going to give us the rest. Now, at that moment, on the Feast of First Fruits, God chose by his power to raise Jesus from the dead. And what makes that so remarkable is when he comments on it in 1 Corinthians, Paul describes Jesus as the first fruits who were raised from the dead. That is, he's the one, the first part of it, that is the evidence, the faith, if you will, that the rest of us will follow. So here you have three feasts. He's crucified on one, he's buried on the next one, and he's raised on the Feast of First Fruits, all exactly fulfilling what those feasts stood for.
Ray,